They both acknowledge their romantic relationship in the late 1960s was tumultuous, but it inspired one of the great pop songs of the era.
They see lilting lyric, losing love, love and day. Change my life, make it right, be my lady.
Sweet Judy Blue Eyes by Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Stephen Stills wrote it about his former girlfriend.
I've looked at clouds from both sides now, from up and down, and still somehow it's clouds' illusions I recall. I really don't know clouds at all.
That, of course, is Judy Collins with her iconic hit Both Sides Now. Well, now, 50 years later, Judy Collins and Stephen Stills, who remained close friends all that time, have finally recorded a CD together called Everybody Knows. And they're in the middle of a national tour that will bring them to Springfield's Gilloway's Theater Thursday, September 20th at 7 p.m. Well, a few weeks ago, I talked with Judy Collins by phone from her home base in New York. By the way, listening to the new CD, and you two both sound terrific.
Oh, thank you. Oh, good.
I mean, I'm 61. I'm going on 62 years old. I just hope my speaking voice holds out that well when I get to my 70s. Honest to God.
Oh, good. Well, we've had a lot of practice, and we love what we do, so we're glad you're enjoying it.
There's no point in going through the history of the whole romantic relationship with Stephen Stills, but except to say that it's always been described as tumultuous. But yet, you two remain friends ever since. You know, so many of those things end up, well, less than amicably.
Well, we didn't say terrible things to one another, and I think that's part of the key. I think we parted with a great deal of angst and Sturm und Drang and emotionally, but we didn't insult each other. We didn't say unthinkable things. I think that was part of it. And I also think we always had the music thing between us, and that kept us friends, I'm sure.
You kept the lines of communication open anyway.
Oh, yeah. We always talked. We always sort of kept track of each other. I would go down to see him in Florida sometimes, and I would see him in New York occasionally, and so we kept the lines open. I didn't do anything with him collaboratively or writing-wise. The only thing I ever did with him was, previous to our going on the road with each other last year, was that I went on Graham Nash's television show 20 years ago, and Stephen came and played the guitar on Someday Soon for me, but he didn't sing.
Right, that video is on YouTube, of course.
Oh, yes. And then he came to my apartment maybe 5 years ago, and we recorded an old Tom Paxton song, which I put on an album of mine called Paradise. And Paradise has also a duet with Joan Baez. I've recorded with her before. We made a record together in the 60s, but that's all. So this is a whole new, fresh venture for us.
Well, it really must be. I mean, it seems like a natural thing, but you know, yeah. you two had never performed together, certainly not on stage.
No.
Now, the idea, you've been kicking around this idea with him for a number of years. I know he has said he couldn't even imagine having done it 30 years ago, even thinking about doing it then.
No. It took each of us to live out a good large percentage of our careers, probably able to prove to ourselves what we were able to do, what we could do, before we could go out as equals.
In your own eyes. I mean, I think everybody else would have thought that you were anyway, but...
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of emotional things, a lot of drama, a lot of growing up has happened in the
right.
past 50 years.
The album was crowdfunded. So many projects seem to be crowdfunded these days. How did that come about?
We had a lot of help from my record company. It's on my label.
It's on your
actually.
Label, right.
It's on Wildflower Records,
right.
Distributed by Cleopatra. So Cleopatra was very helpful. And then we got a lot of help from various sources, which was good.
The interesting thing, you know, the CD title track, of course, is a Leonard Cohen song. Now, this is someone whose career you helped put on the map in a major way. And, you know, you listen to the lyrics of that song. Is it ever timely, even though it dates back 30 years? I think he wrote it in 1988.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows that the war is over. Everybody knows that the good guy's lost. Everybody knows that the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor and the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows.
Well, it's always, as after his death, after I had decided that not only was he the most brilliant, the most generous, the most amazing person I ever knew, but also that he was the smartest person I ever knew, he died the morning of the election.
Jeez, what timing, huh?
He got out of town. I went back shortly after his death. I started singing Everybody Knows in concert, and I recorded it, and I called Stephen, and I said, we've got to do this song. This is a must, and he agreed.
Well, the album contains a mix of things like that great Leonard Cohen song, plus the two of you revisiting songs from your own catalogs, both solo and in duet. And what can our local audience expect to hear from you when you two come to our Gilloy's Theater next month?
Well, it will definitely be a cross-section of the songs from the album. But other things, we've added maybe at least a half a dozen other songs. They range from a real big surprise. We're doing The Highwayman.
Mm.
And we're doing You Don't Have to Cry. And Long May You Run. There are a lot of wonderful new treats.
Well, of course, just if you just did the CD, you'd have basically an hour show, and you wouldn't.
Sure.
You know, right. You have to add a few more things for
now. That's right.
The album, it seems like the songs and the arrangements both are pretty true to both of your folky sort of roots. Do you rock out a bit more in concert?
Oh yeah, and we finally got them right. You know, we've played them enough now that we really know them.
You're both in your 70s now, and you're still performing, recording, touring with your own acts, as well as the Stills and Collins collaboration. What keeps you out there in front of the public after, dear God, do I dare say it, a career spanning six decades? How does it remain fresh for you?
We make a living.
There you go.
So that's part of it. We love it.
What are the challenges to maintain the active career year after year?
The traveling and the arthritis.
Ah, yes.
And we got them all beat.
Well, it's just so terrific that this project has come along. Now that you've done the album and you're doing the tour, you're booked now for at least several more months on the tour.
Well, we have done 25 shows already this year, and we'll do 25 more. So we'll do 50 again this year. We did 50 last year. And then it looks like things are sparking up for 2019.
So it's a whole new cottage industry for you guys.
Yeah, I was waiting to get a cottage like that.
I actually wanted to ask you, not in relation to Stephen Stills, but I do the classical music programming here. I've always been fascinated by the whole connection with Antonio Brico. Conductor and pianist Antonia Brico, the first female to conduct major orchestras in the United States and Europe, was Judy Collins's piano teacher and mentor when she lived in Denver, and Collins helped produce a documentary film in 1974, Antonia, A Portrait of a Woman, that helped revive Brico's career at a time when it was still exceedingly difficult for a woman to be taken seriously in the conducting world. I don't think I've ever seen the documentary itself, but I certainly remember when 60 Minutes did a feature about about her back in 75.
Yeah.
And did she ever reconcile herself with your folk music career?
No.
Oh, what you could have been.
Oh, you could have gone places. Yeah, she still was burning a candle over that.
You know, it's interesting, of course, you studied piano with her, but I've always felt that your voice had that sort of classical instrumental purity. Did you do any kind of formal vocal training?
Oh, absolutely. I studied with a great teacher for 32 years in New York, from 1965 for 35 years on. While everybody else was hanging out at Max's Kansas City, I was standing in my teacher's living room doing scales and exercises.
And aren't you glad you did?
Oh, yeah. Mm. I was telling this story last night to Renee Fleming because we went to see Carousel and had dinner afterwards, and she hadn't known about the classical background or about Antonia Brico.
Wow.
And you know, somebody, and I'm sorry it wasn't me because I wanted to, somebody has made a theatrical movie about Antonia's life. It's coming out of Germany, and it looks pretty good. The trailer is very good. I can't remember what they call it.
I hadn't heard about that.
No, it's very interesting because, of course, I hope it's a blockbuster movie. I don't know if it will be.
It sounds like a fascinating project. I mean, because she certainly had a fascinating life.
I've tried to get Glenn Close interested in the movie a couple of times. But there you go. I haven't had time. I have all of her papers. I have all of her notes. I have her memoir. I have everything. But I just could never really get into it and get it finished. Maybe I will later.
Well, you've certainly written enough books on your own anyway, but but trying to write a biography of someone else has got to be a
huge
yeah. project.
I took a little sort of foray into that kind of writing on my last book, which is called Cravings, and it's about my own struggle with food. But in that book, which came out last year, I wrote small biographies of about 12 diet gurus through history, including people like Atkins and Gaylord Houser and the King of England and Lord Byron and a lot of people. And that was really fun. Doing the history and doing the research for that was really great. I loved it.
It would be wonderful for you to be able to come out with an extensive book about Brico, but it doesn't sound like you're going to have time for it.
I need to have a Fulbright scholarship to do that.
Yeah. Right now, you don't have time for it anyway.
I don't have time right now, no.
Well, I will let you go. I didn't want to keep you for too long, but I certainly appreciate hearing from you, and it's an honor to talk to you.
Well, thank you. It's been a treat for me, too.
Well, thanks a lot.
Okay.